This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, and we're glad to be in the company of the most erudite audience in radio. 877-217-5757 is your number. Talk@talklouisiana.org is our email address, and we begin with one of our faves, Foster Campbell, the veteran public service commissioner from the north country of Elm Grove, Bossier City. He rules Northwest Louisiana, but yesterday he did not rule the Public Service Commission. In fact, he couldn't even pick up a vote from his fellow Democrat, Devontae Lewis. It was 4-1 to give lots of goodies to Chevron, and Foster Campbell was the lone dissenter. It was a meeting with a few interesting developments that we'll talk about. And, of course, Commissioner Campbell is at your service on any environmental matter, and as we know, he has some passion about the future of the state that he has represented either in the state Senate or on the PSC since 1976. Again, 877-217-5757. Commissioner Campbell, what happened at the PSC meeting yesterday?
Well, maybe I'm not surprised. Chevron got a rate increase on a pipeline that they are using for some of their facilities. What's troubling to me, Jim, is that Chevron, last year, the sales on Chevron was $267 billion, with a B, billion. Oil is at $91 a barrel this morning. When oil goes up, Chevron, Exxon, Shell, they all make more money because the cost of gasoline goes up. You know that. The second quarter of this year, Chevron gave $7.6 billion to their shareholders, And here's the real tragedy that nobody wants to talk about. They pass it over. All the politicians don't talk about it because they don't have a solution, and they keep doing things like giving these corporations more money and more money and more money like they needed it. In 21 to 23, we had 532,000 people living in poverty. Today we've got 765,000 people living in poverty. We're the poorest state in the United States, worse off than Mississippi and New Mexico and West Virginia. Our poverty rate keeps rising. The corporations are making record profits. Their domicile, not in Louisiana, but Exxon is in Texas, as you know now, outside of Dallas. But it's a real tragedy. How do we deal with things like that, giving them money because they say they need it? My good litmus test, is this company for sale? The answer is no. They don't want to sell it. They just want more money. I can understand that. I can understand people. Everybody wants more money. But there gets to be a point where people can't stand anymore. And that's a problem. I got outvoted 4-1 yesterday. I tried to deny this rate increase, and it's five people on the commission, and four of them voted in favor of it, said this corporation needed money. And I explained this. This corporation is a big corporation, and all these entities go in this tent. They don't want to sell this company, and I've witnessed through the years, if things are really bad, you want to sell these companies, get rid of them. If they're losing money, they're losing money. No, they come back to the Public Service Commission and say, we need a rate increase. And their parent company, like I told you, had $267 billion in sales last year. So it's troubling to me that we're the Louisiana Public Service Commission. And I know I have some good friends on the commission, and there are various reasons. But it looks like to me that when you're the poorest in the United States of America, gasoline prices are going up. Oil is at $91 a barrel. Look like we would have the empathy on the side of the little guy that's going to work this morning, driving to work. If he lives out in the country, gasoline costs more in the rural areas. He's got to drive the town, and it's costing more and more and more. But what do? We let these people make more profit. I understand they give all kind of reasons, this, that, and the other. But the reasons that we ought to be thinking about is about 4.5 million people in Louisiana and about 765,000 of them living in poverty. That's what we ought to be talking about. But anyway, I got beat, and hey, look, I'm not going to be like Trump. I'm not going to cry about it. I got beat.
it wasn't a fake vote. It was 4-1, and somewhat surprisingly, this is, I think, is the first time Devante Lewis has veered from the path of Foster Campbell, his fellow Democrat. The other three Republicans, not that much of a surprise, but 4-1, and Chevron got what it requested. 877-217-5757. Juan in New Orleans. Hello, Juan. You're on with Commissioner Campbell.
How you doing, Commissioner Campbell?
I'm fine. How you doing, Juan?
I'm doing well. I'm a former state rep from New Orleans, and I was very concerned when I saw the vote come down because I expected that Democrats from New Orleans would stick together with the Democrats from the North. Have you had any dialogue with the Public Service Commissioner from here yet?
No, I haven't. I haven't had a chance to talk to him. I'm sure he has a reason why I didn't vote for it, but that's okay. I got along with him well. I want to get along with him well, but this was pretty much a us versus them vote to me, you know. I know that you can make all the reasons in the world why these big corporations need more money, but my question is, what's enough? What's it take to fill them up? They're always wanting more. But you have to realize that we represent the people in Louisiana, and this company, Chevron, does not want to sell this pipeline. They just want more money, that's all. They want more money. At a terrible time when gasoline is going to go up, they're making record profits on the oil, and then we're going to take it out of the hide of the people. That's basically what we're doing, taking it out of the hide of the people. Hey, y'all can pay a little bit more for gas. I won't kid you. Gas prices don't kill me. I don't like them. I have a car now that gets 30 miles a gallon, which I'm real proud of. But there's a lot of people, minimum wage people in Louisiana, working people, retired people especially. Gas prices kill them.
All right.
And they're going up.
Well, a listener asked, where is Chevron headquartered? Actually, the company is headquartered in San Ramon, California. But the company does have a distinct presence in Louisiana. I know they have a big corporate office in St. Tammany Parish. So what about the job Chevron creates in Louisiana? That's often what those who side with big energy in Louisiana say is, look, they're helping the people of our state. Is that a valid answer to your concerns?
Well, of course, I appreciate the jobs they bring here. But remember, Louisiana is the goose that laid the golden egg. They wouldn't be here because they like Louisiana. They're here because we have the natural resources. Let's get serious. Chevron has no love for Louisiana. If we didn't have the oil and gas, they would not be here. They don't like, you know, and they caused a lot of this pollution, Exxon and them, and they denied it, and they don't want to clean it up. And now it's getting vogue now to talk about carbon capture, and we'll talk about that in a minute if we got the time. But, I mean, hey, they're here because we have the oil and we have the gas, and that's why they're here.
All right, Jim.
Don't kid yourself.
Jim on I-12. Jim, you're on the air with Commissioner Campbell.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a question. This is from a company in the energy sector's perspective. What is the current going rate for a Louisiana politician these days?
What do you mean about the rate? I can tell you how much money I make as a public service commissioner. $45,000. That's the rate. That's what I get paid, $45,000. And I think, and they give you a car expense because you have a large district. But it winds up to be about $50,000. That's how much money I make. I don't know about the rate of politicians. I mean, I don't know any of them that you can buy. They're not for sale, I hope. So I can just tell you, I make $50,000 a year.
Representing one-fifth of the state. And
right. 25 parishes.
Yeah,
right.
And we have five public service commissioners, and I would say that at this time it is divided equitably. I would say if we had a race of an equal Democrat against an equal Republican, that 60% for the Republican and 40% for the Democrat in today's environment would not be a surprise. It would probably be about right. And you got Foster Campbell and Devante Lewis, and then the PSC members on the other side are Eric Skirmeta, Craig Green, and Mike Francis, who's, of course, running for statewide office. And they generally vote as a block, and that's what a listener says. What's the big deal about Devante Lewis? His vote wouldn't have made a difference anyway, Foster Campbell.
Oh, what would help my feelings? It would have helped my feelings to know that maybe somebody agreed with me. But listen, that's, he has a right to do what he wants to do. I'm not questioning why he did it. I'm just saying it was a hard vote to understand. He represents more poor people than I do. He has the poorest district in the state. But anyway, that's his business. I understand he has a reason to. I didn't talk to him about it. I will talk to him about it. But he voted for it. And but like you say, it would have been 4-2. You're right.
3-2, yeah. We'll be back with Foster Campbell after this 89.3 second timeout. This is Jim Inkster. We're pleased to be visiting with you and with Public Service Commissioner Foster Campbell, who right now in some matters is a lone voice in the wilderness. He was only one of five PSC members yesterday to vote against a plan that provides a lot of goodies for Chevron, which, as Foster Campbell said, last year had $267 billion in gross revenues. Now, another matter, a Denver carbon capture management company and a Houston energy firm plan to develop an offshore carbon capture hub in state waters near Cameron Parish's Gulf of Mexico coast. A good story today from Robert Stewart in The Advocate. And this, of course, means big money for some people. We're talking about a massive project converting a 24,000-acre Gulf of Mexico tract off the Cameron coast into a subsurface storage hub that could, according to those who believe in this science, could sequester more than 250 million metric tons of carbon dioxide. What do you make of this, Commissioner Campbell?
It might be. I hope it goes well. I have faith that this science is valid. I'm not for sure. I'm not a scientist. But one I want to talk to you about that is a twin brother to this situation is in Cameron Parish. The government, you might saw John Bel Edwards and Senator Kennedy were all excited about putting one over in Calcasieu Parish on private land. Now, I have some question about that. There's a fellow that this is going on his land. I understand he's a nice gentleman, very wealthy man, which, you know, that's fine. But the government's going to spend $600 million on this project on a private property belonging to a man or his company. I have questions about it. I want to know whose land is it? How much are we paying him to build this facility? And does he get money when they dump this product in his facility? Why isn't he paying for it? Or why, you know what I don't understand? If this is such a good project, why doesn't the government expropriate this property and pay the taxpayers back? The taxpayers are going to be out $600 million to build a facility on private land. And as I understand it, I do not know this for sure. Let me make sure of that, but I'm asking questions. Does the people on the land, when they dump this, whatever they dump, carbon dioxide, whatever they dump, does he get paid for that? I understand they measure it by the ton. Is he getting paid for it? What I'm questioning is, why in the world doesn't the federal government, if this is a specific area, why don't they expropriate the property, pay the man what it's worth, or work it out, and then pay the taxpayers back when they dump it, the government charges a fee, and get their money back? Why should we put this on private property and help different folks make a lot of money, if that's the case? Now, I've asked these questions. I've sent it out to several agencies. Nobody seems to know. But we're going to have a hearing in October in New Jefferson Parish. They're going to be front and center. That's what I want to know. You know, Jim, we have a reserve down there, a strategic oil reserve in the same area, close to this facility. The government owns the strategic oil reserve. We didn't put that on somebody's private property and pay them a big fee to store it. The government has that reserve. That's our reserve. It's guarded. You know, we talk about it all the time. Biden took some oil out of there when gasoline gets real high. He took it out to try to ease the pain on the gasoline prices. So I've got a lot of questions. How do we protect this particular site? Whose is it? How much do we pay him? If we don't pay him anything, that's one thing. Who's involved? And does carbon capture really work? I want to know about that. I understand from some reliable sources that it does work, but I want to hear about it. I want some real pure science before we invest millions and millions of dollars, and especially government money. Now, if it's done by a corporation and it's their money, that's one thing. But when taxpayers pay for it on an experiment, that's another thing. Is the science good? I understand it's good, but let's make sure it's good before we go spend $600 million on private property. That troubles me.
Well, does the PSC have jurisdiction on this matter?
I think we do. I think it's what I suspect, that energy and other companies will be dumping the product in this waste facility. And then we regulate energy. How much would that cost the consumers of Louisiana? That's questions that's got to be answered. I'm just troubled, not troubled, just inquisitive about how they picked this site, what's going on here. Does anybody get the money from it, or does private investors? I understand they're private investors, but it's on this man's personal property. What does he gain out of it? And I understand he's a fine man, and I understand all that. But what I don't understand is why the government doesn't expropriate this property and pay for it and pay the taxpayers back when people dump this carbon dioxide or whatever they're dumping into it, charge a fee, but pay the taxpayers back.
All right.
Why does it have to go to individual?
What is the man's name?
I understand his name is Stream. That's his last name.
Spook Stream?
I understand that. You're correct.
All right.
I don't know if it's him or his family. I don't know that. I've never met him.
All right.
I understand they're fine people. I got that. I understand. I just have some questions to ask. That's all.
All right. 877-217-5757. Carol in Jefferson Terrace. Carol, please be concise. You're on with Foster Campbell.
Yes. I also have questions about this carbon capture. That I want to know the history of why there's always been a big carbon capture project coming up and it never happened.
All right. Well, some people believe this is hocus pocus. Others believe it's the wave of the future, that it could save our planet. General Honoré calls it white man's magic. Foster Campbell, I know you, as I have talked with people who are learned, who believe it works, and but do we really know?
We don't know, but I think it's something that we ought to look at. But I can tell you, before everybody goes absolutely wild, all the companies now are saying carbon capture, carbon capture, carbon capture. That's fine. And if it works, that's great. I'm a little cynical, though. The companies probably would tell you I'm real cynical. I think it's sort of a place for big polluters to hide behind carbon capture, saying, well, we're going to do all this carbon capture, but forget about all the stuff we've done in the past. That's what I think. But I might be wrong, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'll admit I'm wrong. I'll admit I got beat. But we ought to look at it before we invest thousands and thousands, millions and millions of taxpayers' dollars. We have to know what we're trying to do. And I guess they'll say, well, we don't know till we try it. I understand, but let's make sure that we know what we're doing. Know what we're doing. In the sake of the taxpayers, that's basically it.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Commissioner Campbell.
Good morning. Commissioner, I read in the Wall Street Journal a few months back that Entergy is spending hundreds of thousands of dollars for lobbyists in Washington to feather their nests, and they are passing that cost on to the rate payers. Is that legal?
Yeah, they. It's a damn shame, but. And they don't tell you how much they pay those lobbyists. And who are those lobbyists? You'd be surprised who some of those lobbyists are. They're well known. I mean, they've hired some real stars. That's legal. They pass it on to the ratepayers. And it's a shame because some of the lawyers they use in energy hires in Washington to represent them cost $1,000 an hour, $1,500 an hour. They pay the best. They get the finest, and you pay for it if you're on the energy switch over there, wherever you live, you're paying for it. Just like storms. All these storms that energy has, this is going to be a shock to you, but all the storms they have, every one of them, they tell you how bad they are. They are bad. They're terrible. But they pile all those bills up. They bring them to the Public Service Commission. We go through them with our staff and experts, and we total them up, and we give them their money back.
We got to take a pause, but we will return with Foster Campbell after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow is producing, and a few more minutes with Foster Campbell, the esteemed public service commissioner, and he is joining us from his perch in Northwest Louisiana. Yesterday at a commission hearing here in Baton Rouge, he took it on the chin on a vote involving Chevron, in which Chevron got lots of goodies for a pipeline on a 4-1 vote. Even Devontae Lewis voted with the 3 Republicans, but Foster Campbell said no to a company that he says had $267 billion in revenue last year. Mark Ballard is on deck, the man in Washington who used to cover these meetings with Ernest, and a lot of times you see very few reporters at these PSC meetings, and they are among the most important in our state, so it would be good if we had more people like Mark who ferrets out all kinds of information that others do not, and as we know, there are fewer and fewer reporters as a whole and even fewer like Mark. James in Metairie. James, you're on with Commissioner Campbell. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Jim. Good morning to Mr. Campbell. I remember watching television and in the past couple of years, and stories on TV, the news, talking about how Colorado River water is diminishing, the levels of Lake Mead are falling, which jeopardizes the freshwater supply to the city of Las Vegas in Nevada. Yet, here in Louisiana, in Plaquemines Parish, already the salt water is creeping up at a rate of 1.5 miles a day. They're having to import water into Plaquemines Parish for people to drink. What does the Public Service Commission, what role do they play in this pressing problem, Jim?
All right. Commissioner Gamble.
Well, I played about 20 years of butting my head against the wall when I was in the Senate. I hear you. My wife was from Port Sulphur. I know all about Plaquemines Parish. I know about your problems. Your biggest problem is eroding the coast, which the bigger oil companies played a major part in, but you couldn't get anybody to do anything about it. They should pay a big price. Now, I understand there's some lawsuits pending. I support the lawsuits. Y'all ought to be paid for all the damage that the major oil companies have caused to your parish and the coastal parishes down there. It's a real shame. We knew this was coming, but nobody wanted to hear about it. They like they say, they do bring jobs, but they've caused damage. But always remember, they would not be in Plaquemines Parish if you didn't have what they need out in the Gulf. They're going to the Gulf of Mexico to get the oil, to bring it onshore in Louisiana, and they pay no tax, none whatsoever. So you need to talk to your politicians down there. All these guys are running for governor. You ought to ask these people, hey, you got a plan? How about taxing these oil companies that tore up the coast down there and made it impossible for us to live now? You think it's bad now? Think about what it's going to be in the future. And it's a terrible situation, but we've had politicians with no courage that let that continue to happen and happen and happen, turn their back on it. Bobby Jindal passed bills to keep you from suing the oil companies. Bobby Jindal was their number one defender. He loved the oil companies because the oil companies loved Bobby Jindal in many different ways. When he ran, they supported him, etc. You know the rest of the story.
Foster Campbell, it is always a treat to catch up with you. Let's keep it going, and I'm glad you're still
in
the game.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
We're joined now by Mark Ballard, who's in the Beltway, who rubbed shoulders with Foster Campbell through the years. And we're talking about a Louisiana original in Commissioner Campbell, aren't we, Mark?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I kind of miss attending those public service commission meetings, because you're talking about, after you pay your mortgage, you know, that you're talking about probably the largest bill every month that comes in for the utilities. And people just don't pay attention to what's a very important commission, and a commission from which a lot of politicians use as a stepping stone to higher office. Kathleen Blanco, for instance, John McKiffin.
Huey Long, yeah. Almost Lewis Lambert, almost, but...
almost a lot of them. I mean, there was, including Foster Campbell.
Yep, so. And Foster Campbell, who ran for Congress and statewide, but he always ran in off years, so he kept his gig, and he has been in office continuously since 1976, and he is a happy warrior, unhappy about some of the votes, as he was yesterday, but he continues to trudge on, and he's, I know he would resent my comparison, but he was born a few months after Donald Trump, and both of them have been blessed with boundless energy. 877-217-5757 for Mark Ballard. We got some ground to cover with Mark today. Richard Nelson, he announced his candidacy on this program a few months ago, and now he's out of the governor's election, and he endorsed Jeff Landry. He is the most moderate Republican in the field and endorsed General Landry, who's regarded by some as a far-right guy. I don't know if that's accurate, but he did endorse him. What do you make of this?
I think that Richard Nelson didn't gain traction, and with his arguments towards being, you know, a more moderate, more practical type of Republican candidate. He's also very young. And so this will not be his last shot, even though I believe he's going off, he says he's going off for private interests. I'm pretty sure we'll be seeing him again.
I think we'll see him again, but he might very well have won one of the other statewide seats, but he did not. You have been reporting on things happening in Washington, and you note that disaster funding is tied up in the U.S. House, and that Louisiana projects could be caught up in this appropriations fight. And it appears that Kevin McCarthy has lost control to some extent. What's happening with the majority in the United States House?
Well, last night, behind closed doors, they came together with some sort of deal. I guess we can call it that. But basically, it looks like Kevin McCarthy has folded and is going to pass sometime over the next few days. They'll pass some sort of continuing resolution that will continue government for another month, but it will include all of the far right wish list in those appropriations. And they're all pretty much, you know, dead on arrival. It will not include funding for the Ukraine or the disaster relief, which they're tied in the same they're tied in the same bill because they have to be. And but the Senate, it says, well, we're going to do it. You know, forget about it. And they are also passing this bill on the border security, of which the president said he's going to veto it if they pass it. So he's just basically passing a bill that that will just continue the fight, you know, in a few days.
877-217-5757. Now, on funding for Ukraine, some members of our delegation, including Clay Higgins and Garrett Graves, have voted against it in the past. And I think it's apparent that without the United States' support of Ukraine in that war, that Vladimir Putin would control Ukraine. Even George Will says that it's a conservative gesture to support Ukraine in this fight, but he doesn't have the support of Garrett Graves and Clay Higgins and perhaps some others in our delegation. Who's going to win this one?
I don't know. I know that the last month that Matt Gaetz, the guy, the Republican firebrand from Pensacola, tried to amend a bill that had, you know, removing Ukraine funding on it, and it got 70 votes in the House, and including members of the Louisiana delegation. But it also, remember that the House does not have the sole word on this. The Senate is involved. And so, I mean, I think we're going to end up seeing something that will increase the funding for the Ukraine and release that disaster funding as well.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually.
Okay, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. A few days ago, our junior senator, John Kennedy, read in a Senate committee hearing from several explicit books and used the actual words coming out of his mouth that he found objectionable to be in books, but yet he chose to utter them in a committee room, and now it's for the masses to hear forevermore. But these were found in some public schools around the country, and John Kennedy took exception. One of the titles, for example, is Gender Queer, a graphic novel that's caused controversy among parents and criticized for depictions of sex acts. It was the most banned book in 2021, according to the American Library Association. Kennedy, by the way, did not read passages from The Godfather, which includes explicit words about heterosexual relations, but he chose to do this. And Robin's pulled up some of Senator Kennedy's remarks, and this is heavily, heavily, heavily edited because it just cannot or it should not be heard on the public airwaves, even though it was heard from the mouth of Senator Kennedy in a committee hearing. Here is John Neely Kennedy.
Let's take two books that have been much discussed. The first one is called All Boys Aren't Blue, and I will quote from it. I put some on and got him on his knees, and I began. I and kissed him. He asked me to turn over on himself. This was my, and I was struggling to imagine. He got on top and it was the worst pain I think I have ever felt in my life.
All right, that's John Kennedy. I think we get the idea, but he read these words in a committee hearing, and it's available if you choose. And I suspect most of our listeners will not choose, but if you choose, you can go on the World Wide Web and hear it in all its glory. What got into Senator Kennedy to do this, Mark Ballard?
Well, okay, they were looking at, this was in the Senate Judiciary Committee, that was looking at book banning around the...
Okay, we're going to hold tight and be back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana. Your number, 877-217-5757. Robin Dow is at the ready, and Mark Ballard is our guest for the last quarter hour, and he visits with us almost every week. And we're pleased to have his enlightenment from Capitol Hill. And you were talking about the Senate Judiciary Committee reviewing possible book banning and Senator Kennedy going into overdrive and reading passages, explicit passages in all their glory, unedited from the voice of the man from Centerville, Mississippi. And he let it all hang out, shall we say. And Mark Ballard, I just can't imagine somebody as smart as Senator Kennedy saying those words, because some opponent could do a robocall and have him saying those words, of course, out of context, and it would, of course, shock the hell out of his constituents. But what do you make of this?
Well, actually, he was using them out of context as well. I mean, basically what you had were Democrats saying that the right wing was using books as a potential wedge issue, and they were talking about removing books like To Kill a Mockingbird, the books by Toni Morrison, Mouse, which is, comic book is the wrong word for it, but it's kind of a graphic book about the Holocaust, and these are books that they are removing from school libraries and public libraries. Now, it was unclear exactly where these two books, if how widespread, or were they in public libraries, were they in school libraries? And he was making the point that that parents need to decide to keep those two books out of school libraries. And so that was what he was cross-examining Democrats that were on the panel or supporting the Democratic cause on the panel. And he was saying, you know, that the procedure should involve only parents deciding up or down and not any of these other procedures that were being talked about. And that's the context in which he said it. It caught a lot of folks in the newsroom by surprise, but for me, and who've been following John Kennedy for years, that I was not shocked at all that he did it.
But Kennedy, I recall, before he was ever elected, he was the campaign manager for Buddy Romer in 95, a race, of course, in which Romer finished fourth. That was after he had lost the governor's election. And his brother, George Kennedy, who's a very good political consultant, who's handling Hunter Lundy, said of his own brother, when Romer hired him to be his campaign consultant, he said, you don't hire a products liability lawyer to build a house, you hire a carpenter. Kennedy saying those words, they're forevermore coming from his mouth, and as a politician, that is fraught with danger, shall we say. Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Hey, I mean, Kennedy's just reading a book that's allowed in the library. I don't see why everyone had a problem with it. Anyway, I wanted to talk about Ukraine. It doesn't make sense that the left was against Vietnam. They don't care about Cuba being invaded by Russia. We didn't care about Afghanistan being taken back over by the Taliban and Iran. Why do we care about Ukraine all of a sudden?
All right. Well, Patrick, if I recall, and some might say unfortunately, Democrats were in office when the United States went to war with Vietnam, not Republicans. And there was a Democratic president who averted perhaps a nuclear war in 1962 when he stood up to Nikita Khrushchev in Cuba. His name was John Fitzgerald Kennedy, not John Neely Kennedy, and he stood tall against the Russian Empire. And I don't know, in retrospect, whether invading Afghanistan was a good move. George Bush did that, but certainly it was a terrible move to go into Iraq in Afghanistan, which at the time I thought was prudent. I must say that. I supported the invasion of Afghanistan against the Taliban at the time. It didn't work out very well either. So, Mark, I don't know that you can use those as a way to measure whether or not we should be funding a war that the Ukrainian people did not foist upon themselves. It was solely the act of one madman, the Moscow midget, Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, I would have to ask Patrick of Innisfail Estates if he thinks that it's okay for Russia to invade sovereign nations. But I do want to point out that there are issues about how much money that the Ukraine, or positions that they're taking, that how much money the Ukraine is taking and has not actually gotten, you know, over this war. And then how much longer are we going to be investing in that war? That's one issue that's being brought up by the right. And then there's other issues such as the defense minister being fired for corruption just a couple of weeks ago, the defense minister in the Ukraine. And so they're asking, probably reasonable questions as to how is this money being spent and how much more money is going to be needed.
This just in, Steve Scalise, the number two person in the U.S. House of Representatives, has endorsed Jeff Landry for governor. Jeff is a good man, Senator Scalise sends us this message. I trust to fix the very real problems we're all facing. So it looks like the troops are rallying around Attorney General Jeff Landry, and as I've stated before, he looks like almost an irrepressible force as the successor to John Bel Edwards. We're 3 weeks from Saturday from the primary. This is one endorsement I think that is huge. He had to work hard to get it, and he got it, Mark Ballard.
Well, actually, I thought that Scalise had already backed Mr. Landry, but apparently not.
Kennedy hasn't yet. Cassidy did, but Kennedy's too busy reading books that he wants to discuss on the Senate floor when the Judiciary Committee hearings. But anyway, go ahead, please.
I was surprised that Scalise hadn't already. I think that, you know, we're looking at, you know, Governor Landry fairly soon.
You said it. He looks like he'll be in a runoff with Sean Wilson, and Wilson is a good candidate. And yesterday, John Bel Edwards did his show, and he told me that if he had had a chance to run for a third term, he would have done it, but constitutionally he can't. He's supporting Sean Wilson. But would it have been a different race? There are those who believe that Jeff Landry, it's his time, that he would have even beaten John Bel Edwards. That would have been a race for the ages, though, wouldn't it?
I think it would. It wouldn't be a guarantee that Landry would win in that race. But Sean Wilson, who is a great candidate, you know, and would make a good governor, I think. But he did not have the military background that John Bel had. He also didn't have the flaws that David Vitter, Vitter was brought down by his Jefferson Parish colleagues in the Republican Party as well. And Landry ran a pretty good race. Is running a pretty good race.
I think he's running a great race, and campaigns are often not analogous to actual office holding. But you got to say, if Landry is elected and he runs the government as well as he's run his campaign, we're all in good shape. Bill Huey says, why did Mark Ballard's newspapers endorse Wags? Is that what's happened?
I don't know.
I don't think so. Ralph McAllister endorsed Stephen Wagersback, but I don't know that the Advocate and Picayune do. And I don't think they endorse anybody anymore, do they?
Well, I think the Picayune might, but the Advocate doesn't endorse. But you know, I don't know. They don't talk to me about that. That's mostly the higher ups, way higher than my pay grade.
Well, Stephen Wagersback gave up something extremely tangible to run. He had a $600,000 a year job, which he will not get back. And he is in the last polls moving, but. He's got a long way to go, Mark.
Well, he's going to have to get ahead of Sean Wilson to get into that runoff. Now, if he gets into the runoff, things may change dramatically, and I'll have to eat my Governor Landry words. But right now, it doesn't look like his movement is enough to take out Sean Wilson.
Well,
the Democrat.
Sean Wilson is the lone active Democrat, but there are two other Democrats on the ballot, and Ron Fauché, also an esteemed pollster, Monday at the Baton Rouge Press Club, said his recent survey showed about 40% of the people don't know who Sean Wilson is. So if a Democrat goes in and is unfamiliar with Wilson and there are two Democrats ahead of him on the ballot, I suspect those other two Democrats are going to get some votes by default. But I don't, at this point, think that's enough for another Republican or Hunter Lundy, who also has shown some movement, to go past Wilson and get to Landry in a runoff. But it does look like Nelson yesterday, Scalise today, Landry is rallying the troops, and he started with the endorsement of the Republican Party, and it has been a case in which every aspect of the campaign, from endorsements to candidates who did not run, they've all fallen in place for Jeffrey Martin Landry. So we'll see what happens with the election 3 weeks from Saturday. Phil in Jefferson Terrace, quickly, you're on. Good morning, Phil.
Yes, sir. I have an idea to save the campaign some money. Since Trump didn't show up for the inauguration, I don't think Biden should show up for the presidential debate.
All right. Well, Joe Biden would probably pay dearly if he didn't debate. Trump may not debate. He doesn't like the moderators, the networks, blah, 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 and he didn't show up to debate his Republican challengers, and I doubt that Biden's in any mood to debate Bobby Kennedy Jr. Mark, we got a roll, but thanks for your insights as always, and we'll call again next week. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Back tomorrow. Stay tuned.